This is The End User, episode 154 for Tuesday, December 3rd. Juggle drones are the future. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Moth.
Taylor, it's only been 5 days since we were last on the podcast here, so we've got a bit of a short show, but that's okay.
It's full of interesting stories, I think.
Yeah, I think we got a pretty good lineup going in here.
All right, so last night, Chris, I was watching 60 Minutes on CBS, which is something I always, actually never, ever do. but I was attracted by the interview of Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon.com, with Charlie Rose. And at the end of the interview, he said, "Hey, I want to show you something really cool." And it was a drone, a quadcopter or maybe an octocopter drone that he says will eventually be able to deliver packages directly to customers by air in 30 minutes or less.
Yeah, it was the device they showed off, or whatever prototype that is, was an octocopter. It was 8 rotors.
And I guess 8 rotors is enough to carry something up to 5 pounds.
Yeah, so I guess for little dinky items, this is a little strange. So I see the kind of vision that they're after in that you want to kind of get the bike messenger thing without paying for bike messengers, right? So I understand that, but this is nowhere near anything. This is really just a promotional kind of video at this point in time, right?
Yeah, they won't have it ready anytime soon. They said probably 5 to 10 years.
That's like the what the scientists always say. The scientists always say, "Oh, you know, it'll be ready in the next funding cycle." That's 5 to 10 years.
Right. Well, Mr. Bezos also said on the interview that he expects Amazon to eventually be subverted by another company, that someone else will just upend the business model on top of them, and he just hopes that he can get to this before that happens.
So that's interesting. So I guess any good businessman knows that their business will eventually be obsolete, and you want to be able to be nimble enough to switch away, you know, like what did Nokia used to do? They sold wading boots.
Yeah, that's right.
So they realized that the wading boots business was not so great, I guess, at some point, and were able to switch away into some other kind of business. So yeah, that kind of goes for any business, doesn't it?
Well, it's a rare company that can switch from wading boots to mobile phones.
Yes.
But yeah, that's right. I mean, any business that does really well in the marketplace is eventually not going to do so well.
Yeah, so back to the Prime Air thing, I think it is kind of an interesting concept, and I think this is kind of a promotion piece for Amazon, but it's also worth thinking about the possibility of actually using drones for domestic services. It wouldn't stop at packages, would it?
No, not necessarily. They do say that they're working with a 5-pound weight limit, but currently about 80% of everything that Amazon ships is under 5 pounds.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Taylor, and you might know the answer to this. How much does a beer weigh?
A regular 12-ounce bottle of beer is well under 5 pounds.
All right. We might have something here.
Yeah.
I don't know about the packages, but
yeah, I don't know about 6 packs. I don't think you could do 6 packs.
A little, forget the beer, but just having a little device in your home that can fly around, I think that would be kind of cool too.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, that could be much sooner. You don't have to get FAA approval for that.
Yeah, it would just fly around and do stuff for you. Like, I could imagine a little quadcopter with a little dusting feather or something like that, just kind of flying around dusting stuff every once in a while.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, there's all kinds of applications for this kind of technology. And even if Amazon develops this and never deploys it to carry packages, I imagine they could have some kind of patent out of the deal or, you know, something like that. But I don't know. We're way off into the woods now.
Well, you know, there's a reason people call these things drones, and it's because they make a heck of a racket when they're flying around near you. So if it's worth it to you having an incredibly loud noise while your house is being dusted automatically, then yeah, okay, sure.
So I immediately thought of a video from a while back, and I think we talked about it on the show, but it was two quadcopters balancing a pole. So there's one quadcopter balancing the pole, throwing it to the other quadcopter, flipping it over 180 degrees, and the second quadcopter caught it and balanced it.
On the other end, yeah.
Yeah.
So I remembered that one.
These things are getting pretty advanced, and maybe it's worth starting to think about some kind of application for these kind of devices other than fun, you know, nerd devices that fly around.
I don't know. I think we should just keep focusing on the juggling drones. I mean, why not? If you could just have a whole series of drones and they could just juggle products from the Amazon warehouse to your doorstep. I think juggle drones are the future, Chris.
Yeah, I can see a place for them.
Well, All right, our other top story this week is that Dell has surprised everyone by launching a new line of ultra-high-definition monitors. So they are already starting to ship 4K monitors, that is 3840 by 2160 resolution, in 32-inch sizes and 24-inch sizes. And this 24-inch one is probably the highest resolution desktop display that's ever been shipped from a major manufacturer. And it's only going to be $1,400. It sounds like a lot, but it's a lot of pixels. And yeah. They're saying that next year they're expecting to launch a 28-inch model that will be under $1,000.
So the 32-inch one is $3,500 and is a worldwide release. So, yeah, you know, these things are coming around the bend. It really makes me jealous, particularly with my seriously old in the tooth 19-inch monitors. These things are getting real old. I'm looking for an upgrade. And
yeah.
I'll probably wait for the price to come down a little bit, be my guess, but I definitely need an upgrade for my 1440 by 900 monitors.
Well, I think Dell is going to sell a lot of these pretty quickly, especially once the new Mac Pro comes out, the computer that's famously capable of running three simultaneous 4K displays out of the box.
Nice. So this is a IGZO LCD panel. I remember you talking about this as a sleeper technology for this year.
Yes, that's right. Indium gallium zinc oxide. And it turns out that this technology has also popped up in the new iPads. It is more transparent than the previous LCD display technologies, and therefore you can power the display more efficiently and lower the amount of power used for the backlighting. So it gets thinner, more efficient, and brighter, more clear and correct colors. Indium gallium zinc oxide. Did I say that was a sleeper technology for this year? Well, I was right.
Yeah, and I'd imagine they're going to roll this into TVs as well.
Absolutely. Now, I think the 24-inch 4K monitor from Dell does not have an IGZO panel. It's an IPS LED.
Cool. So that's definitely one to watch. And I'd have to imagine this thing is going to come down in price and, you know, some competitors are also going to jump in the market. But that seems like a pretty reasonable entry. It seems like a better entry than OLED monitors had. I remember they came in with like a 10-inch monitor for a few thousand dollars, but it's a little different. It seems like a pretty good entry for a kind of pseudo mass market monitor for not a lot of money and a whole lot of pixels.
Oh, are you talking about Sony's old XEL1?
Yes, probably.
Yeah, it was 11 inches, right, 11. $1,600, and it wasn't even HD.
Sad. So this is.
But I saw it in person once, and I can tell you, it was really thin and really, really bright.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It did.
Cool. All right, well, shall we get into our afterburners? Do you have your seatbelt firmly attached?
It's firmly attached now. Let's go.
Okay. Sony is releasing its Smartwatch 2. They had the Smartwatch 1 release last year at some point. I think it was like 18 months ago. And the word is that this is $199. It's got a rubber wristband. And the hardware is clearly improved. It's kind of along the line of the Pebble in terms of the design of the hardware. But apparently, according to The Verge here, the software is not quite so usable. So smartwatches are still in growth, and they're still trying to figure out what they should be. And this seems like a pretty healthy contender.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I don't know about the interface, but I don't see why it's particularly more impressive than a Pebble, say. And I'm still waiting for something to really wow me in terms of smartwatches.
Yeah, the one thing is that all the smartwatches that I've seen just try to do too much, and they don't focus on their kind of reason for being.
Yeah, it'll take somebody else to change the industry and kind of bring clarity to that product category.
Yeah, so we'll see what Apple has to offer in a couple years here.
Now, in completely different news, the cable company Time Warner in the U.S. is starting a $30 a month program that gives subscribers HBO and about 20 other channels. It's sort of just offering a smaller package for people who kind of want a curated selection of channels. I don't know what the other channels in there are. It's the local broadcasters, C-SPAN, etc., a bunch of shopping channels. So I guess they want to still sell you stuff, but you can get your HBO and your HBO Go for $30 a month.
Cool.
This is
That's
on
nice.
Top of Comcast's announcement last month. They were going to launch just HBO and internet for $30 to $50 a month.
Cool. So you get only internet and only HBO Go, right?
Yeah, I think that was Comcast's plan.
Nice. So that's definitely something to watch out for cord cutters who want to watch HBO shows. That's cool.
Yeah, and a lot of people who live in Time Warner's zone don't have Comcast and vice versa. So Comcast and Time Warner covers a pretty large swath of the U.S.
So Google has pulled the CyanogenMod installer from the Google Play Store, and this was a... you know, CyanogenMod for Android is a custom ROM that you can put on that cleans up a lot of the kind of bloatware and is supported by the community and that kind of thing. So they had a installer in the store that would wipe the original ROM and put CyanogenMod onto it, which was definitely the easiest way to do that. It beats how we used to do it in the old days with the SD card, I'll tell you that much. And so Google pulled this down from the store, saying that it violated their terms of service. And it can still live on with sideloading. So you can still kind of get it, but you have to kind of know where to look.
Yeah, you can still get it and install it yourself. But this sort of puts CyanogenMod and rooting in general back into that category of jailbreaking for Apple devices, where it's officially completely unsupported and by the developer of the software. Although Samsung and LG have announced their support for CyanogenMod. They've decided to embrace it. Or maybe LG didn't. I think Samsung did.
Yeah, I don't know. Samsung has had so many phones, and it's hard to keep track of them all. All right, well, let's turn off the afterburners. Let's get into the end user stories. And we've got a little bit of a unique one this week. I was thinking about this, and, you know, I'm always on the lookout for a Windows Media Center replacement, because clearly Windows Media Center, while it still works, is kind of long in the tooth at this point. There's not going to be any new features, that's for sure, and what is already there is supported for the moment. They have had a few bug fixes, but I'm always on the lookout for something that kind of ticks all of the boxes of what I want in a Media Center, and it by no means is perfect. So it got me thinking, what is the perfect Media Center? And when I answer that question to myself, I realize that there is, in fact, no product on the market that meets all of the things that I do with Media Center. So what do you think? What do you do for your media consumption on TV?
Well, I used to have Apple TV, and that was my main interface. And then we switched up our network, and now we use a PS3 for a lot of it. And recently, we've been using the Wii U, which is much more enjoyable than the PS3. And that can still get you Netflix, Hulu Plus, YouTube, a bunch of other apps. But none of them had as many services as Apple TV did. So we're really looking for a new way to cover that. But we have a cable box from Comcast. And that works well enough, although Comcast is charging us $10 a month for it, just for the most basic HD box. And I definitely am thinking about getting rid of it. So I am in the process of planning a Mac Pro, an old Mac Pro, home server / media center. And I'm trying to get that up and running. And I don't know. I definitely want a centralized iTunes home sharing library.
Yeah, that would be great.
That's important for me. And something that will be easy for everyone I live with to be able to access all of the content that they want. So I'm looking at things like Plex or XBMC to create a simplified interface on our TV that will be easier to manipulate and control and bring up what you want than the PS3 or the Wii U or the Apple TV. And that is what I'm hoping for. And I'll tell you, the one thing that bothers me the most about using this Mac Pro as a media center is it just uses way too much power.
Yeah, so that's the main thing.
You don't want your media center to be using more power than your TV. So ideally, you want all of these capabilities with a low power footprint. And it's absolutely possible. There's no technology that's missing to get all of these categories. But you have a much more complete list. You're more demanding about your media center. So what is it that you want?
I guess I am. And I was thinking about writing a blog post, and I might still do that. But first and foremost, the thing that I do with my media center that doesn't seem to have a rival is the DVR functionalities. So I know there are DVRs out there that are nice. I know the TiVo is nice. But in combination with other things, Media Center does a lot that TiVo and other solutions just cannot do. So first off, in my perfect Media Center is over the air and preferably cable support with time shifting of TV. So I want a DVR and I want to be able to pause live TV, right? That seems pretty basic. So secondly, what I'd want is a Blu-ray and DVD drive. That there's no compromise there. I mean, Blu-ray is the best quality media that you can get to consume movies and whatever. And there's no way that I would get along with a device without it. And that's a problem. So I look at devices like Simple TV, and there's no Blu-ray there. You know, it's only concerned with TV recording. And I really want both in one device, and there's no reason I couldn't have both in one device. So I also look around and I see XBMC, and it really can't do Blu-ray. There's no way on Linux to do Blu-ray very elegantly. There are some kind of workaround, weird ways to get Blu-ray to kind of pseudo-play on Linux, but you basically can't do it. And you could use XBMC on Windows and still use ArcSoft Total Media Theater or CyberDVD. Or sorry, Power DVD. But there's really, then you are missing out on the TV features because XBMC has some live TV support, but it's not quite there yet as with Media Center. So the whole point is that I want to have a device that kind of stands on its own, doesn't really need a back-end cloud service, although the back-end cloud service would kind of be the cherry on top, right? So as a consequence, you would really have no monthly charge because there's really no service that you're paying for.
Right, and even companies like Plex and especially TiVo and just about all of these companies are starting to offer paid cloud back-end for premium support.
And I don't mind, you know, paying monthly for an upsell, right? If there are things that get added and that happens to be charged for, that's fine. But the basic service of what this box is supposed to do is that it's on my network, it's slurping TV out of the air and recording it. That's not really something that requires any kind of monthly service.
Right, or like my current situation where I'm on top of the cable that I'm paying for, mm-hmm. I have to pay an extra $10 a month just to watch it in HD.
Yeah, so I mean, assuming you're paying for cable, that's fine. But once it kind of enters your house, it should be up to you what you do with that. And having a DVR that works kind of locally and is up to you what to do with the content is definitely a good thing to have. So next on my list here is Netflix support. So there are a lot of other services in addition to Netflix, but that's probably the most important one for me. And it's really nice on Media Center that it is actually a full computer, and you get to use your browser as a fallback. So whatever video you can't consume because there's no app for it, you can just go use the web if you want. That's been kind of essential in my use of Media Center at this point.
Because that's how you get to Netflix, through Windows Media Center?
Well, so there's a Netflix app, but sometimes there's just no other way to get at the content, right? So sometimes you just have to open a browser and use Flash or HTML5 to get at something. So, for example, there are some shows that are streaming on the web that we cannot get at through the TV or through any kind of app like Netflix.
Sure, because they're just hosted on some random site that doesn't have an app.
Yeah, it's like, I can't think of the channel right now. But yeah, just some kind of content that is out there on some, you know, cable TV's website that you can get at with a browser.
Right,
so
sure.
Using that as a fallback, I think, is absolutely crucial.
All right, and it seems pretty reasonable. Any computer that is going to have the capability to do DVR recording and have Blu-ray on there should easily be able to handle.
Oh, yes.
Browsing the web with Flash. It's not that hard.
Absolutely. And for these last few, they're a little less important, but I'll move through them a little more quickly than the primary first few that I mentioned there. So Dolby THD and DTS HD bit streaming over HDMI or SPDIF is fine, but you've got to have surround sound if you're going to release some kind of product that is consuming media. I think most people don't have surround sound, but the people who like quality stuff that is on Blu-ray, let's say, are more enthusiastic about surround sound. So that's definitely a must.
Sure, and even if somebody just had a sound bar,
yeah,
and
sure,
they couldn't get the virtual surround sound that the sound bar provides, they'd be upset.
So 1080p is obviously required, and I'm thinking 4K moving toward the future would probably be a nice thing to have.
Sure. At this point, that would require a much bigger video card, but
oh, yes,
we'll get there eventually.
Eventually. So we're not quite there yet. And lastly, this is something I don't really use at home, but HDMI CEC is a very nice thing to have. So that's the ability for one device to notify all of the other devices around it to turn on, and enables you to, you know, throw away the remotes that all you use is the power button. So that would
sure,
be...
yeah.
That would be a nicety. That's something, you know, that's on my little Christmas wish list here. So, and lastly,
my parents have a Sony TV and a Sony soundbar and a Verizon Fios cable box, and they have one remote for all of that.
Nice.
And it's just, and I didn't even have to program anything. It just worked.
Yeah, I wish I could have gotten, now I'll have to go back and try this at some point, but the Samsung TV that I have has HDMI CEC. It's called AniNet. It's their kind of brand over CEC. And I never was able to get that working quite correctly with Media Center and with the surround sound system. So I don't know. Maybe I'll have to give that another shot.
Well, that's the trick, right? Samsung has their own CEC codec, their own system, and it's not necessarily compatible with everybody else. And I'm pretty sure Sony's the same way. So
yeah,
there really needs to be universal CEC. It shouldn't be that hard to do.
Yeah, it should be some kind of standard. All right, and lastly, kind of related to that, if I have a Media Center, I want one remote. And I want that to be the end of the conversation, because I don't like having a ton of remotes for a ton of devices. So things like the Roku, I know, come with their own little remote, and you have to have, you have to have like a Google TV and a Roku and all these devices. Forget it. I want it all in one box.
Yeah, the Roku remotes are Wi-Fi direct now, so they're not even compatible. You have to use the Roku remote.
Yeah. So,
or a smartphone.
And again, what would be nice to have on the side is the ability to use an app to remotely control things. And so in Media Center land over here, I've got the Seton apps that work really, really well for controlling the Windows Media Center from both my Windows Phone and Surface and laptop and Android and iOS. So that would be kind of a nice thing to have.
Yeah. And from pretty much any media center platform to iOS, you can usually find a compatible remote or, you know, a couple of apps that are going to do everything that you want. My only problem is that I wish that they would remain backwards compatible so that I could use my first generation iPod Touch that's just sitting dust, collecting dust. It would make such a great media remote, and it doesn't make a great anything else.
So to kind of wrap up here, whatever company first makes a device, and I'm not sure this will ever happen, but if you make a device that can consume over-the-air and cable TV with DVR functionality and a Blu-ray player, and at least have a browser and a Netflix app, I've got $1,000 for you.
Chris, it's like your own tiny XPRIZE.
Yeah, right. Except for it's only $1,000, so I'm not sure anybody would gun just for me. But, I I've got to imagine, this is why I wanted to talk about it a little bit while the news was slow this week, there's got to be other people like me. And I know there are other people like me, because I know that the Windows Media Center community is out there. And I know there are other people like that want all of these kind of things in one box. I know it is oh so possible to do this. And I'm kind of disappointed as I look around and look at some other solutions that, you know, just come so close, but then, you know, don't have Blu-ray. Or they have Blu-ray and then they can't do TV stuff or whatever it is. So anyway, I'm sure that there is a market other than me out there.
Yeah, of course there is. Absolutely. And I think anything that had that list of qualifications would get a really serious look from me as well. Yep. But in the meantime, my needs are simpler, and I've mostly just been looking at free apps that I can put onto this 2006 Mac Pro that I'm getting. And I was looking at Plex and discovered that last week, we didn't report on it, but they've come out of beta. They introduced their 1.0 release, and so it's, you know, it's officially ready for the mass market. And so for that reason, Plex is probably my media center front runner right now. It gets the end user Futurist Prime seal of approval.
Yeah, and I haven't checked out Plex in a little while. So I'm going to have to go back and take a look at this. I wonder.
Most of the reviews that I read for Plex were from 2010 and 2011.
Sure.
And they say it was really buggy then. So now I'm expecting a pretty polished release, and I can't wait to try it out.
Yeah, I've been playing around with live TV and Xbox, XBMC for a while now, and it works okay. Now, I wonder if there is some Plex equivalent. I don't think there is, but it might be worth me having another look at Plex, because it does support Windows as well as OS X, so that's cool. Yeah,
it supports jailbroken Apple TVs. It supports Android, Windows Phone, iOS. It is quite cross-platform.
So how long have they been not 1.0?
Years. Must have been 5 years or something.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. Cool. All right. Well, let's move on into our tip of the week. And as usual, I'm useless and you've got us covered. What do you have for us?
Well, this week, Sharon Vaknin over at CNET.com has us covered. She does really great how-to videos with some frequency. And this time, she did a how-to on if you have an iPhone or an iPad and you're using it to play music through YouTube. A lot of people just sort of use YouTube as their music library these days. And recently, Google allowed Android users to listen to music over YouTube in the background, but they don't have that option for iPhone or for iOS. She's figured out a workaround, and you can just you hit the share button and then open up a message to share the video and then turn off your phone screen, and the audio just keeps going, and that's it.
Cool. Well, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, but you should definitely go to CNET.com and check out Sharon Vaknin's how-to series. They're very interesting.
Have a look. We will have a link in the show notes, so head over there to thedigitalmediazone.com and have a look at the show notes. So our app pick of the week is something I've heard about before for it's been a while, and I've got some hazy recollection of this being talked about over there in the Android community, but AllCast Beta has come out. So what's going on here?
Yeah, so as usual, Android is staying ahead of iOS in our news stories here. And this Allcast, it comes from one of the original members of CyanogenMod, and he's developed this software that can stream video, images, and music from an Android device to any supported TV, Xbox, or Apple TV, as well as anything that uses DLNA or even Roku.
Yeah, and the DLNA device category has been kind of growing over time, so that is starting to include a whole ton of devices at this point.
Right, so this is just basically a dedicated media sharing app for your Android phone that can share it to just about anywhere.
Cool, that's pretty awesome. So I remember this when before it was beta and it was just kind of being talked about as a thing and being pretty excited to try it out. And so I'll have to give this a look on one of my old Android phones. And I'll have to hope for Windows Phone support later, and I doubt it will happen. All right, so on to the kicker we go. What do we got? More drones, more robots.
All right.
What is this?
Now, when I first read this story, I thought that I was looking at a picture of a full-size Airbus A380 piloted by remote. That is not quite the case. It is a 16-foot-long model A380 as a proof of concept, meaning they can do it if they wanted to. So it's just basically piloted completely by remote. They made this particular model out of styrofoam and balsa wood, but it's a scale model and weighted properly. And basically, it's a proof of concept to say that you could fly the world's largest passenger jet completely by remote if you wanted to.
Yeah, I know the in-cockpit pilot assistance and autopilot and stuff like that has gotten pretty darn advanced. So I'm not entirely surprised by the fact that this is happening. But you have to go see the picture of this thing. The model recreation of the airplane is just fantastic looking. So that is the coolest remote plane I have ever seen. It beats the pants off those quadcopters and octocopters that we saw earlier in the show.
Right. It makes a much less annoying noise.
Oh, yes. In fact, I'm sure it makes a much larger noise, although a cooler noise.
Yeah.
All right. So, Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you on the internet, how would they go about doing this? Perhaps using some kind of remote device.
Yeah, probably a juggle drone or an A380 drone. Yeah, one of those two.
So what should it
drop? That's not really the internet, is it? So you use your drone to type onto your keyboard and open up Twitter using the drone and send a message to @TaylorPhone on Twitter.
Cool. And if you wanted to get at me, I'm @ChrisHillBarnes. So let me know if you are with me about this media center replacement device that we will probably never see, because I'm sure you guys are out there. So let us know if you're one of those people. All right. Well, let's get out of here. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, over there at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have them listen to Entertainment 2.0, Seen in HD, the movie podcast, and the DMZ's latest Home On. You can send us some feedback. Our email is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can tweet at us. We are @theenduser. You can join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Mock.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
That's drone from bye-bye.